If you have a financial question for Pager Bruce, you can always call this number 24-7, 888-6-ADVICE. You can also email those questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But right now, you can call and or text our studio line, 651-461-9226, 651-461-9226. Once again, here's Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor Peg Webb, and the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, Financial Advisor Bruce Helmer. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Denny. Good morning, Bruce.
Hello, Peg. Hello, Denny Long. Thank you for the introduction. Hey, Peg, last week we talked about saving for college, and specifically we talked about 529 plans. This week we thought, and by the way, most people listening right now probably just went through the 4th of July holiday. Our country celebrated a birthday. I think it was birthday number 248, if my math is right. But I hope everybody had a safe, wonderful 4th of July. But today we were just going to do a show that we do from time to time and just have open lines. Just Denny, as many callers, texters, people that have questions, we'll get to as many as we can, but we'll get the ball rolling, Peg. I know that when we left last week's show talking about 529s, you wanted to look up and see because as we ran out of time, we were talking about the possibility of having a 529 plan with a fixed interest account that you didn't have to invest it into the stock market. And I know you did some research since last week and looked into that a little bit. Why don't you share with us what you found and then maybe do a quick debrief of 529s for somebody, not that we're going to repeat all of last week's show, but a quick truncated version to remind listeners that don't know what a 529 plan is.
Well, thank you, Bruce. I think we probably should talk about 529s more so than we normally do because there was so much detail to these 529s on our agenda last week, and we tried to get to all of them. And then we had so many questions about them. So they're absolutely popular. One of the reasons they are is because if you put money in, you can have that grow tax-free. So anytime people hear tax-free, their ears kind of perk up and say, wait a minute, maybe that's something I should be doing. But it came up because I brought it up that 20 years ago, when I opened 529s for my kids, there was a fixed option. And you kind of think about 529s as, oh, it has to be a kid that's maybe a newborn or, you know, maybe they're a couple years old. You don't think about opening up a 529 for a 16-year-old or an 18-year-old. Well, at that point, 529s were very new, and I was able to open up an account and get something like a 4% interest at the time. Well, then interest rates have gone dramatically down, right? And it is just as of recent that we're able to make money on our money being in a conservative option like a money market or CDs or something like that. So I thought, well, I'm going to go research and see, is that a possibility now that interest rates are up, that if you do have an older child that maybe you still want to look into a 529, you don't have the time to do a lot of tax-free compounding if you want to use the money for that particular child of that age. I don't want to discourage you because you could still open a 529, you know, and have it compounding for someone else for the long term. And remember, Bruce, that I mentioned that you never have to cash these in. I mean, you could be 100 years old and keep changing beneficiaries or, as you mentioned, use it for yourself to go back to college or something like that. So anyway, I did the research and there is, I couldn't find a single fixed income option, but there is a lot of money markets. So money markets today, as you know, many of them are north of 5%. And so the recent performance in the money markets, or what they somewhat call the conservative bucket, have performed very well. But it isn't like you'd be able to lock in an interest rate for any length of time at all. money markets vary basically day to day on how short-term interest rates are doing, and so you can't necessarily lock in. But the reason I wanted to, I was thinking about that last week was, you know, the stock market is just doing so well. And I think you have to be mindful of, if you are going to be taking withdrawals from your 529, you may want to do a little analysis and prepare maybe for the next 2 to 3 years, 4 years. And if you are all in the stock market, you may want to, because they allow you to, move to a different investment. Now, you have to be careful because terms of that 529 is you can only change it twice a year. It doesn't have the flexibility of an IRA or another account that you could go in daily and change. So, Bruce, I just wanted to give those couple updates after I researched during the week.
I also have an update on 529, something I didn't know. So we also last week, Peg, we talked about how they are more consumer friendly, potentially more attractive today than they've been in the past, because people now have an option if they end up not using the funds for higher education. If they jump through certain hoops, they can actually convert to Roth IRA. So here's a scenario that I had with a longtime client, really good client, set up only one 529 plan many years ago with the oldest child named as the beneficiary. And they had the idea that they don't need to have a separate 529 for each kid. They could have one 529 and change the beneficiary as each child got older and went off to potentially to higher education. And I said, sure, you can do it that way if you want to. Well, at that time, I had no idea that this change would be implemented where you could potentially convert to Roth IRAs. So their question was, if their kids end up not doing it for college, can they split it in the thirds and each kid have a Roth IRA? And I didn't know the answer when they first came in. I'd never confronted this question before. And the answer is it really doesn't work that way, because one of the contingencies to be able to convert to a Roth is the account has to have been open for 15 years, and every time you change a beneficiary, that 15-year clock starts all over again. So really, there can only be one Roth IRA. So unfortunately, the decision we made years ago, probably now with the changes that have occurred, are not as efficient for my client as it could have been. Again, didn't know that at the time when we made the decision 12 or 15 years ago or whenever it was. But in hindsight, we probably should have advised the client to set up an account for each individual child. So my question back to you, Peg, do you want to comment on that? Or, again, we're going to get listeners involved, Danny, and get as many questions as we can. Peg, is there a question or questions that you're finding that are prevalent these days that you're getting in your practice and your experience and your interactions, you're interfacing with your clients and prospects?
Are we specifically talking about Roth or 529s or something else, some other conversation?
Well, I wanted to know if you wanted to comment on my experience with the 529. You don't have to, but no, just wide open. Are you getting something a lot right now? Are you getting the same question independently, frequently from different clients and prospects? Maybe not. I just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, not so much. But what I can tell you is in the career that we've had, right, decades of time, we've actually been having aha moments where, what? Now they're going to change this thing where, you know, how can we possibly plan for something when all of a sudden they just change it? My question is, why 15 years? Like, who are these people making these decisions? And why is it $7,000 and not 10? And why, you know, so I think we'll learn more about that and maybe they'll massage it down the road. And maybe it was just a throw in something to make it look like, oh, here's another way to entice people to save for college. Because at the bottom line is the cost of college, and actually, not that it's just college, right? It's K through 12. You can use it for multiple things. And so the cost of all those things to educate our children are just so much higher than any other inflationary item that we've seen. So that's why they're trying to throw in, I would say, some bones to get us to entice people to maybe open them. And actually, with my research, Bruce, during the week, they're so much more flexible and you've got so many options. And I feel bad for people because I would truly say go to your advisor because, you know, there's so many options and you don't have to buy the one that's in your state. But if you do buy the one that's in your state, you may want to look and see if there's some type of tax credit that you would get. It's complex, Bruce.
Yeah, it really is. And I found that out with this change, and I didn't know the answer to the question, and I didn't get the answer that I wanted when my team researched it, when the roundtable researched it for me. Hey, Danny, let's tell listeners how they can get involved if they have a question. I've got a couple other things in my notes that I want to hit, but let's inform listeners how they can get involved.
Absolutely, Bruce, you can do that right now. As a matter of fact, we'll get to your questions right away. You can call or text our studio line right now, 651-461-9226, with any financial question you have in mind. Again, call or text 651-461-9226. You can do that right now. Bruce?
Thanks, Danny. Hey, Peg, one of the questions that there's two, and one we've kind of already talked about, so maybe I'll push that to the background. I still get a lot of people that are freaking out because it's a presidential election year, and the country and we as a society have become so divisive that if our party, if our candidate doesn't win, we think, you know, the sky is going to fall and all heck is going to break loose. And, you know, I tell people over and over and over and over again that there's no historical data to support that fear. That's just not presidential election years are not typically horrific for the economy, bad for the market and so on. I'm still getting those. But the other one that I've had several times recently that maybe you want to jump in on, it's kind of a version of I'm getting close to retirement or I'm getting close to where I'm going to use my money. So I've had it invested in this retirement plan, in this IRA, this Roth IRA, this 401k. I've always invested for growth. In my 30s, my 40s, even my 50s, I was focused on growth. Now I'm in my 60s and I'm approaching retirement. How do I change? Should I change how I invest? And again, I've had different variations, but that's what the question amounts to is, how do I reduce my risk? Should I reduce my risk? When do I do this? Maybe you want to jump in on kind of that broad question. I've had versions of that several times in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, we're hearing it more and more as the stock market just continues to go up. But one of the things that I want to say right away is we do not manage people's money and distributions of their money to their retirement date. We actually manage money and coach people until they're going to leave this earth. So first of all, a 60-year-old probably statistically is going to live to 85. Now, what I am finding, Bruce, and we've seen this for decades of time, more so people have tax-deferred buckets. And what do I mean by that? Well, through your employer, you were able to contribute to a 401k or a 403b. You hid that money from yourself because the employer took that money right out of your paycheck before you got to put it into your checking account. And you just happily just kept deferring. Now, they did add a component of Roth 401ks and 403bs not too long ago, but some people took advantage of that, but it felt so painful to have to pay the tax immediately. And many of my clients said, why am I doing this? I'm just paying all these taxes when I could make money on those tax dollars and continue to compound tax deferred. Well, the problem is you get to be 60 and now you're going, you know what? This work thing isn't that exciting anymore. I'm actually starting to think of, hey, maybe I'll pull back. You know, maybe I've only got 2 years, 5 years before I want to make a paycheck for myself out of these savings that I have. And so that's where it becomes tricky, because now you owe Uncle Sam so much money for every distribution you take out. Right now, I know people are a little bit heavy in growth. And I think, as much as I said, plan to your, you know, demise, it's not to your retirement date. You still have to think thoughtfully about how are you going to create an income for life. So we do a lot of financial planning, and we do, you know, forecasts and where you're going to take the money from. But we have this concept of this your money matrix. So it's easy to organize in within Wealth Enhancement Group, because we use this worksheet. And first you take your taxable money, money that you're getting 1099s on. Then you take your bucket of money that's deferred, the IOU to the IRS. Then you have your tax advantage bucket. And then you start looking at, you know, where is a good place to take my income from? Is it all the tax advantaged right now? Is it all tax deferred? Is it some cash that you have in the bank? The reason I bring that up, Bruce, is because when you're thinking about the stock market and how high it is, I can't tell you that we're at the highest high. Well, right now we are, but that it's not going to go further. But you have to start thinking about maybe rearranging where your growth is to create these paychecks. And then I'll throw one other thing in there, Bruce. It's the Social Security decision, because that's another big conversation that we have with people is, do you want to spend your own money out of your buckets, or do you want to turn on Social Security, you know, so that you don't have to use a lot of your liquid savings? And that brings another component into the planning. And it's a hard thing to do yourself. You know, so getting organized, getting all your buckets defined, and then illustrating out where you would take the money from and when you would collect Social Security. Bruce?
Peg, I love what you say about how we don't just plan and invest to retirement. We plan and invest for your entire life. And you also always talk about how seriously we take this responsibility of creating a paycheck for life for our clients and make sure they don't run out of money before they run out of breath. I'm just going to add really quickly, and then we'll get Danny tells me we got questions coming in. We want to get the listeners involved. But really quickly, I just want to say the other thing that I tell clients is that the investment advice that we give is almost never designed to get the highest rate of return possible, right? That may seem counterproductive or inconsistent with what people think. They want to get they want maximum growth. They want to get the best return on investment that they can. But I want to get the return that they need to meet their goals and objectives, to retire when they want, with the income they want, and I want to get it with the least amount of risk possible. So I sometimes tell clients not to put more money in the market or to take some money out of the market. Let's reduce your risk. And as they hit this age of getting close to retirement, maybe the goal does shift. Maybe the top priority isn't growth anymore. Maybe it's preservation of what they have, followed by income. Yes, we always want growth at every age, even after we retire, but maybe growth moves down on the priority list and preservation and income become more important. This is such a good topic, and there's so many roads we could go down. I'm sure we'll do a whole show on this in the near future, but that's probably enough for today. Danny, can we squeeze in one question in the first half?
We can set this one up, and maybe you and Peg can follow up with more details if needed. But this one is about a trust. Who sets up a trust is the question. How can I set up my bank savings and checking accounts to be a trust so the funds are simply given to my children upon my death? Should I have one of my children set up now in my checking and or savings account so they could pay bills if I become sick or pass away? That's the trust question.
Thank you, Danny. Hey, Peg, we can probably knock down most of this in we have got a little over a minute. When people say trust, just for clarification, they're usually talking about a revocable trust. Again, the term that precedes trust is really defining the trust, but I'm assuming revocable trust, and they're also talking about maybe putting a POD or TOD on the account or a beneficiary, and they're also talking about maybe power of attorney. So there's really three different concepts there. Maybe we can't get this all done, but maybe comment and we can finish after the break. Peg?
Yeah, what I can tell you is this comes up all the time. And when you design a trust or you create a trust, you need to put all your assets in the trust. So that's another step that a lot of people kind of forget about. And why would you do a trust versus maybe just keeping everything in your own name? And then the big one that I think we have to address on the way on the backside here is the checking account. Every single client says, oh, I've added my daughter and I added my son and now we've got a three-way account. And but is that the right way to do it? And so there's a lot of steps that you need to take so that it's the cleanest, you know, for your kids at the time. And so we need to address all of those things, I think, on the backside, Bruce.
Yeah, I was crazy to think we could do that in a short period of time, Denny. I know we need a break. We'll elaborate after the break.
Very good. Again, this is your chance to ask any financial question you may have in mind. The rest of the way, you can call or text our studio line at this number, 651-461-9226. Again, call or text 651-461-9226. We'll take this bit of a break and be right back on the other side with more of Your Money. If you have a financial question for Peg or Bruce, call this number 24/7, 888-6-ADVICE. You can also email those questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. But right now, the rest of the way, you can call or text your financial question right now at our studio line, 651-461-9226. Call or text 651-461-9226. Once again, here is Senior Vice President, Financial Advisor Peg Webb, and the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, Financial Advisor Bruce Helmer.
Thank you, Denny Long. Thank you, listeners, for staying with us. Right before we took the break, Denny read a text question, and Denny was correct. There's no way we could answer that in the time we had left. So we're going to elaborate. So if you joined us late, Denny, if you still have it in front of you, can you read that text again?
Absolutely. Who sets up the trust is the text question. How can I set up my bank savings and checking accounts to be a trust so the funds are simply given to my children upon my death? Should I have one of my children set up now in my checking and or savings account so they could pay bills if I become sick or when I pass away?
Thank you for rereading that. So, Peg, as Danny rereads that text, again, the magnitude of different issues that we could go down here, I just jotted down, you know, trust versus will, power of attorney, TOD, POD, or beneficiary, joint ownership versus not, step up in basis. You want to go first and go down as many of those roads as we can to try to answer the questions in the text?
Yeah, that's why I said, I don't think we're going to get this all in. Number one, trust and who sets up the trust. So one of the things that clients, we educate them on is, do you need a will and do you need a trust? Now, our answer is everybody needs a will, but not everybody needs a trust. And so one of the things that trusts do is it really names everything that's going to happen that you've already made all decisions on, who the assets are going to pass to. And there's different types of trust. Bruce, you mentioned the word revocable. Revocable trust just means, hey, I'm going to write this document and I'm going to put everything in here that I want to happen to my personal assets, but I get to change my mind. So that just means it's revocable. The second type is irrevocable, where you're making decisions and you actually can't change that again. And then there's a more complicated trust that's called the qualified term interest trust. So it's called a QTIP. We usually use the short acronym of that. But let's go back to trust. So it sounds like there already is a trust. And one of the things with I have a trust, and mine's revocable, but what my attorney did is they don't have every single dollar in my trust. You can have a bank account that has, any asset that's under $75,000. that can pour over. So what happens is when they created my trust, they also included a will in there, because you can have, you know, if there's things that you forgot to put in the trust that are even grander than $75,000, you can have this will that they would pour over too. So now you have this trust, and you want to have some of the cash go for ready payments, like things that bills are still coming in the mail, and you have to take care of them. Normally, you would pick one person. You know, you already probably have an executor for your trust, like who's going to take care of the affairs, pay off the debts, and do the final tax return and that kind of thing. That's the, and it's usually a child, and usually it's one, it's not several. So you could name that person as the beneficiary on that bank account. It gets a little bit complicated when you name all the children on there. And the number one mistake I see, Bruce, is that they usually try to put that person as a joint tenant. And that's muddy, because technically as a joint tenant, they if she passes away or he passes away, then it automatically 100% goes to that person. Then the attorney could do things to, you know, get it changed, but yet that's not the best way to have it set up. And so anything to add, Bruce?
That was really good. The only thing I thought of is you talk about mistakes that people make. And in the first half of the show, before we went to break, you mentioned, and you kind of elaborated now, that, you know, putting assets in the trust. One of the mistakes I see frequently is people go to the time and trouble and expense of drafting a revocable trust, and then they don't, quote, fund the trust. Or in other words, the trust doesn't own the assets that it should own, which kind of defeats the purpose of having the trust in the first place if you don't fund it. The other thing, Peg, that I see a lot is people, as they get older, they want to put adult children on the accounts as joint owners. And I get why they want to do that, but they need to also understand there can be detrimental impacts of doing that. And the first thing I think of is a step up in basis. So if my child is the beneficiary of an account and I have a low basis, I bought a stock or I put money in the stock market many years ago, and it's grown a lot over the years. If I leave, and it's not in a retirement plan, it's in what we call a non-qualified account. If I leave that to my children, let's say my basis was $1 a share, and when I die, it's $100 a share. If I sell that, or my child is on there as a joint owner when I die and they sell the stock, their basis is the same dollar that mine is. But if they're the beneficiary, not a joint owner, their basis steps up to 100. It's not my basis of $1. And if they sell the stock at $100, they don't pay any taxes on all that gain. So be careful about putting kids and other people on accounts for joint ownership, and be aware of the potential negative tax situation that you're creating that could be avoided if they weren't a joint owner. So, yeah, there's probably a lot more roads we can go down with that question, but I think we hit the highlights. Danny?
651-461-9226. You can call or text our studio line right now, 651-461-9226. Next text says this: you mentioned money market accounts that are just over 5%. Texter says, I opened one a year ago, and now the return for the next year will be around 4.5%. Should I leave the money there or move it to another bank for a higher return?
That's a great question. Peg, how much are you studying or looking at or researching interest rates? What's realistic right now? 4.5 still pretty competitive, or would you shop around?
No, it's five or above. And so I would definitely shop around. The concern I have, so a money market is a valuation that is changed every single day. So it isn't like, let's say, a CD at the bank, where you may say, okay, I'm going to buy a one-year CD, and it's locked. It's fixed. Where it almost sounds here where you used to get a five and now they dropped it to 4.5. I don't know if that's something that would be fixed like for the next year. But money markets are variable. And it's going to depend instantly on how interest rates are doing at that time. Now, many people have, well, two things. The accounts that have cash in them and the money markets are one of the highest dollar amounts that has been forever. Like, there's a lot of people in it because, number one, you get all this flexibility and you get these high interest rates. Well, the problem is they will change very, very, very fast when interest rates start to come down. And I know we've been talking about this for a while. Oh, the Fed's got to cut rates. They got to cut rates for the economy to, you know, to continue and have this soft landing and all these things. But yeah, it's great today to have these high interest rates, but we've been encouraging clients for months now, and I would say more than months, more than even last year, saying, okay, if it's money that you're not going to use instantly and you don't need it, then maybe you start to lock in some treasuries, you know, because even though the interest rate is lower, so I'm getting to the story here, because this is a 4.5. Yes, if you went longer on treasuries, bonds, 4.5, you could get 5-year, 10-year and lock in a 4.5. Now, the reason you might do that is because interest, if you still believe that interest rates are going to go down, and I do believe they will, I just don't know when, then it would behoove you to maybe look at locking in some fixed rates. And so, Bruce, I just believe that this is maybe maybe a CD versus a variable day-to-day money market.
Yeah, I've talked about this on the show before a little bit. I, in my entire life, until within the last 15 months, I had never bought a certificate of deposit. I never owned a bank CD in my life, and I now have a couple of CDs because I wanted to lock in the rate because I also felt that rates were going to go down. And they have a little bit, and this is the funny thing about the banking industry. Peg, at the beginning of the year, many forecasters, many economists, many so-called financial experts were predicting that the Fed was going to drop the interest rate 4 times this year. Well, it's July, and they haven't done it once yet. But that hasn't stopped the banks from anticipating that the Fed's going to do that, and they have started to drop rates a little bit. So I'm kind of glad I got a little bit of money in the CDs. So, but still, I agree with you. I still think if you search around, you can find 5% or more on a money market, but that doesn't mean it'll be 5 in a week. It could, like Peg said, it's very variable and it can move quickly. So that leads me to a story, and maybe I told this on air. I've actually had a lot of clients in the last, again, year and a half that have wanted to put more money with me, and I've actually talked to them out of it. For the reason being, we actually kind of led the show with this idea of not taking more risk than what you need. If you can get the rate of return that you want to achieve your goals and dreams and objectives and success, and we can do that with less risk, let's do it. So when people can make 5% or more on their money with no market risk, that and they're older and they're in their 70s, that's a good idea. So the one, I remember one client came in here, he had sold his home. He wasn't going to buy another home. He was going to rent some sort of senior property. And he had a check for $180,000 he wanted to invest with us. And he already had considerable money in the market. And he's in his late 70s. I said, you know what? The bank in my lobby, which I'm not going to name, but I bank, they're convenient. They're in the lobby of my building. I said, I just opened up a high-yield money market account there for north of 5%. Why don't you go talk to them? Well, he was very skeptical. He's like, well, how long is the rate guaranteed for? I said, not at all. They could lower it tomorrow. He goes, well, I don't like that. And I said, yeah, but you don't have any time commitment. If they lower the rate to something that's not attractive to you, you can take your money out and put it someplace else. So I said, if you can make 5, why don't you do it? Now, if they drop the rate and it's 2, then come back upstairs and talk to me about doing something in the stock market again. But you've got complete liquidity and complete flexibility on that money. So there's a lot of different fixed interest accounts with no market risk. I do more than one. I know you do too. I have a money market. I think you've got some treasuries. I also have some CDs. And yeah, interest rates are you know, like you said, we can actually make money on our money. And the last thing, you know, that's a two-edged sword. So as we see interest rates start to come down, it's less attractive to us for investors, for our safe money, but it's more attractive for people that want to borrow, that want to buy a house, that see the mortgage rates come down a little bit. So this interest rates going up or down is always a two-edged sword, and it depends upon where you're at in life. But 4.5% is not terrible, but if you do a little due diligence, I think you can find a higher rate. Danny?
Here's another text, Bruce and Peg. If you have a TOD deed and husband and wife are the grantors, will each spouse still retain ownership right of survivorship?
So, Peg, this is getting into the issue that came up a couple weeks ago. Somebody had texted a question about life estates, and I brought up the fact that life estates were largely obsolete. Attorneys didn't use them much anymore because they used this other legal document. And at the time, I couldn't remember the name of it. And I said last week, my walk I take after the show, it hit me during my walk what I was trying to think of during the show. That's the transfer on death deed. And I brought it up and I gave a very, you know, simplistic but correct answer that I didn't do the week before. And then somebody called in, and I think he was an attorney, and he elaborated on that to a great extent. But I'm not sure in terms of the transfer on death deed and retaining ownership. I think the retaining of ownership for multiple people gets back to why you might want to use a life estate. I think the transfer on death deed, there's just one individual owner, and they name the recipients almost like a beneficiary on the transfer on death deed, or at least that's my understanding. Do you have you have anything to add to that?
I really don't. You know, when you add the word deed, that kind of changes everything because then it starts talking about real estate. We do use transfer on death on accounts. You know, you think about you could name someone as your beneficiary. You can, and then that's typically a transfer on death is just giving it to a beneficiary. So I don't really have anything to add, Bruce.
Yeah, the basic premise, though, Texter, is the life estate deed, they're both legal documents drafted by an attorney. My understanding is the life estate deed allows you to have multiple, and there's a legal term, I'm going to say owners, but that's not the term they use. But the transfer on death deed, there's usually just one owner of the property, and they name the recipients. Again, I'm going to use the word recipient or beneficiary. I think the deed or the legal document uses different language that escapes me right now. But again, the attorney that called in last week, I assume he was an attorney because he knew the difference between the two inside and out way better than I did. I'm not an attorney, and so I don't know if we can if Peg and I can answer your question any better than that. Sorry. Danny?
Here's another text. My children are set to inherit my late husband's share of the family revocable trust, most likely about $250,000 each. Will they need to pay any kind of tax on the money?
So, Peg, a couple of issues here. Number one, you know, these legal documents, these beneficiary arrangements that we have on investments, everything gets tricky when, you know, and this is the way life usually happens. Most of the time, people don't die simultaneously. There's one death first, and there's some planning and things that need to be done then, and then there's some more planning upon the second death. And in terms of the taxation of inheriting money, obviously, and you can expand on this, it depends upon what they're inheriting. What kind of investment are they inheriting? Peg?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Bruce. This is pretty wide open. But let's give an example. So it is very tricky when someone's already passed away and then there's a trust, and a lot of times the trust won't be distributed or it's distributed over time. But what happens is, let's say with real estate, and it all has to do with the basis, like what's the value of that house or asset or any hard asset on the date of death, because what we have found is that trust could be 10 years old already. So the date that was transferred to that irrevocable trust is that's where the basis is. So the people who are going to be the beneficiaries would have to pay capital gains on that asset. The same with stock, like individual stock or some kind of a holding. They would go back to that date of death. That actually surprises people. They actually feel like the $250,000 would all come to them. The other thing is if it was an IRA. A lot of times you don't have an IRA, a deferred account, in a trust, but it's possible that the beneficiary of that IRA, a trust was named, and then the terms of that trust is what you have to follow. So there's a lot of complexity here, and if I were you, I would go find out, you know, this $250,000 for each of them, you know, what complexities there are. When and what the terms of the trust say, Bruce?
Yeah, and even more basic than that, and this what seems very straightforward to you and I is still very confusing for a lot of people. So let's say that someone inherits assets that aren't in a trust. They just inherit money, and I get the question a lot. I'm going to inherit this money. What's my tax obligation? Well, it depends. Was it in an individual retirement account, an IRA, a tax-deferred type of an account? Because then if you inherit, yes, it's going to be taxable, but not all at once. You have to take withdrawals or distributions, and the amount of distribution you take per year is taxed as ordinary income, and you have to deplete that account over a 10-year period of time. If you inherit a Roth IRA, you still have to take withdrawals, but you don't have to pay taxes on it. If you inherit a non-qualified account, you might get a step up in basis, which might mean you don't have any taxes or very little taxes. So again, it depends, is the investment, the non-qualified, if it's not an IRA, is it in investments like stocks or bonds or mutual funds that have grown in value? Is it in an interest-bearing account? So the complexities in terms of, do I pay tax? The answer is, depends upon what it is. How much tax do I pay? Again, depends upon what it is. And I see this a lot more often. I think it's actually easier and cleaner if they inherit assets from a trust. Again, there's complexities, but it seems to be a little bit more straightforward. Danny, I'm keeping a close eye on my stopwatch. I don't think we have time to squeeze in another call, but I hope everybody has a great day, and it's good to be with you again, my friend.
Very good. Thank you both, Bruce and Peg. Yeah, we'll be back again next week with more of your money. But keep in mind that if you have a financial question any time during the week, you can always call this number, 888-6-ADVICE. Again, that's 888-6-ADVICE. And, of course, you can always email those questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Again, the email is yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. We do hope you join us again next week with more of Your Money.